How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the top local stories of the day later on in this podcast. First, Chicago City Council has about 3 weeks left to pass a budget. But some alders and the mayor are far from seeing eye to eye on things. There is a whopping $1.15 billion budget gap. So where's the money going to come from? While Mayor Brandon Johnson has been trying to whip up support for his proposal, a group of 26 alders have thrown their weight behind an alternative budget plan, a plan which, I should mention, Johnson has already rejected. So what exactly are alders proposing? We pulled two of them into the studio to find out. At the table, Alderman Gilbert Villegas of the 36th Ward, which includes Belmont, Cragen, Hermosa, and Portage Park, and Alderman Timmy Knutson of the 43rd Ward, which includes Lincoln Park, Old Town, and the Gold Coast. I started by getting their reaction to the fact that Mayor Johnson isn't letting up. Here's Alderman Villegas.
I think that when you just say no, that's not really compromising. And as the mayor says that he's in a collaborator in chief, we want to see some collaboration from the chief executive officer for the city of Chicago. So I would say that some of the ideas that we've put forward, a lot of them based on facts, some from the EY report, which is the Ernst & Young report, mm-hmm. which identified $1 billion of efficiencies. We feel that a lot of those can be captured in the 2026 budget.
And I'd add on and just say, you know, a frustrating part is when we introduced this, it was more of introducing a pathway. We weren't necessarily looking for a yes or no. I don't think we dreamed of getting a yes. We're all done. But it was a pathway to have, you know, constructive, collaborative conversations mm-hmm. Towards passing a budget, which we should all want to do. And it's frustrating then when the CEO of the city, per se, is saying, nope. We're not going to talk much about this. I'm doubling down on my first proposal.
So the main point of contention here is the corporate head tax that Mayor Johnson's proposing. And this would require essentially businesses with 100 or more employees to pay this $21 per employee monthly tax. What's your issue with it, Alderman?
Yeah, I would say for me, I come from a growth-based industry. I was a lawyer for startup founders, and it really does convince against growth. In our city, we need companies to be here that say, hey, Chicago is a place that's promoting me to go from 50 to 150 employees. Our constituents and residents want those jobs as well. Chicago is really strategically placed to be a hub in the country for startups and founders, better cost of living than the coast, a lot of Big Ten talent. So specifically for that, any tax that we put on jobs, it argues against more jobs. When you tax something, it limits the result.
Is it really unreasonable, Alderman Villegas, to expect these larger corporations to, as Johnson puts it, you know, put more skin in the game and pay their fair share?
Well, I think besides the head tax, you're also looking at $1.8 billion worth of borrowing for operations, $166 million for the fire contract that we're having to borrow, settlements that we're having to borrow for, which, so in essence, you're borrowing for corporations. I'm sorry, you're borrowing for operations, rather. Mm-hmm. So as we talk about corporations, let's break that down. So the SBA, Small Business Administration, identifies small businesses at 500. And so by identifying firms at 100 or more employees, you're really taxing the smallest of the smallest small businesses. So if you want to talk about taxing corporations, let's talk about that at the state level, so that way all corporations across the state are paying more. versus just targeting out Chicago to pay more. That being said, you know, when you talk about paying the fair share, these corporations are already paying. And I'm not saying that if you want to take this down to Springfield, have a discussion around that, you can. But this has been a campaign budget where people have been saying you need to tax the billionaires and millionaires,
right,
where the city of Chicago does not have that authority under the Illinois Constitution.
Yeah. When we think about the small businesses, though, I mean, what you just described, you know, from the Small Business Administration, I mean, it's a far cry from what I think about, like that 10-person staff at the mom-and-pop family-run restaurant, for instance, you know, right around the corner.
So here, let's talk about a restaurant group. Maybe he has three or four restaurants, or she has three or four restaurants. I have a specific example. I have a gentleman who owns four muffler shops, right? He has 102 employees. So the question is he a millionaire? Is he a billionaire? I would argue not. Mm-hmm. And instead of paying $21,000 in the form of this head tax to the city, what's to stop him from paying $5,000 to his accountant and taking his company and split it in half? And then we're catching no revenue. Mm. So I think we need to really take a look at what the size of small businesses is, and really put it into whether you're talking about a bakery that has multiple sites, whether you're talking about auto mechanic shops, whether you're talking about restaurant groups, et cetera. Those are things that are not large corporations. They're not Google. They're not Amazon. These are you know, small businesses that hire 70% to 80% of employees in the city of Chicago.
Yeah. So Alderman Knutson, you've said here, and I think we're making the point from your standpoint that the mayor's corporate head tax is going to have this major impact on small businesses. It's going to drive big companies away from, you know, keeping their headquarters here in Chicago. Are you concerned, though, that adding fees to residents and trying to, or, you know, rely on them to bridge budget gaps will eventually drive them out of Chicago?
Well, I think we always have to look at holistically. This head tax proposal is set to raise $100 million in revenue. That's not our whole gap, right? Instead, that hits at businesses who we need to help grow our downtown. Our downtown has struggled since the pandemic. A lot of these businesses that head tax would hit are also the businesses that we're trying to encourage to expand their offices downtown, which, by the way, makes them a bigger property tax payer. That goes into the pot of money that we need. It helps our restaurants that are really struggling in the Loop because a lot of these businesses are pushing to back to 5 days a week in office. Mm. It argues against just, you know, a tech company thinking about moving to Chicago, making all of their giving the option of remote work for everybody. Yeah. Its growth is holistic.
Yeah, if we think, though, at the track record, as we talk about driving businesses away, without the corporate head tax, businesses have been leaving. They've been leaving the city, right? You know, for example, Walmart closed four stores in 2023. This was despite the city subsidies that it was given, as well as being built in TIF districts. There are several other examples. So I'm wondering, like, what is this going to be as impactful as you think it is?
It sends a bad message. And I think part of the issue right now with this budget process, mm-hmm, going toward into December, right? I think my first budget I was under Mayor Lightfoot was passed in October. It was months ago. The credit rating agencies are watching. That has a very long-term negative impact on us. If we are decreased further to junk status, our debt, everything we do becomes more expensive. It makes it so 10, 20 years down the line,
right,
we cannot do any of these services and city amenities that we're trying to fund through this budget.
Mm-hmm. Hey, if you just got here, welcome. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop, your space for context, community, and conversation every weekday morning at 9 a.m., we are going inside the Alder's alternative budget plan that Mayor Johnson is rejecting, and we're learning more from Alderman Gilbert Villegas of the 36th Ward and Alderman Timmy Knudsen of the 43rd Ward. Tomorrow on In the Loop, some researchers and organizers who say that the budget options proposed by these Alders are going to harm the city in the long run are going to join us. We're going to hear more of their take on this. Now, the budget that you and your colleagues are proposing nixes the corporate head tax and instead includes a flat tax on every package delivered to homes and businesses. It nearly doubles the amount of garbage fees. There's a higher tax on liquor, among other things. Why do you feel that this was the way to go, Alderman Villegas?
Yeah, so I'll say that, number one, the discussion around the delivery impact fee tax is something that this administration is going to take a look at in the 2027 budget, because they feel that Springfield needs to give the city authority. So that's not going to be part of this budget.
Mm-hmm.
But besides the two that you mentioned, we also are looking for $90 million in additional EY efficiencies, improved debt collection. You know, the city is owed over $1 billion of outstanding debt. And so we're asking them, instead of doing $100 million of collection, why don't you do $250 million of collection? Because that helps overall city. We did talk about liquor tax. We did talk about a congestion fee, you know, just expanding the boundaries a little bit more. Augmented realty advertising, $26 million. Environmental benchmark ordinance, $3 million. Improved revenue forecast of $31 million. So there's a lot of ideas that we're talking about. Now, mind you, these are just ideas. The one thing that this administration has said is that mm-hmm. the city council members are not coming up with ideas. We're coming up with ideas. Now,
He invited you to come up with ideas.
Well, it's our responsibility as a legislative branch to put forward something, given the fact that the budget that was introduced signaled, S&P signaled, that would lead to a downgrade.
Yeah.
So as fiduciaries and appropriators, it's our responsibility to say, wait a minute, we need to make sure that we're putting forward a responsible budget. The mayor's proposal, it's a proposal, means that there needs to be back and forth discussion. This is not something that's dictated to us as the legislative branch or co-equal branch. So those are the things that we're trying to do, is we're trying to make sure that there's solutions that we can talk about.
Mm. So where are you willing to meet in the middle?
Well, it would be amazing if we were having that conversation instead of just hearing no, because where it's our responsibility to continue to propose new ideas. I want to note that it's the mayor's responsibility to listen. And also something we don't talk about much in Chicago is the mayor does not have a vote on the budget, right? There's just a really clean reality that to pass a city budget, mm-hmm. you need 26 alder people. They're not there yet. If I'm not there and I'm negotiating, I'm pushing for further compromise to get more people across the finish line. It's kind of frightening that we're this deep into December, because thinking even strategically, I can't tell if they're just trying to run down the clock and assume that maybe some other alder people, you know, might flip to a yes vote as the clock gets run down, or if they're just negotiating in other ways. It's been interestingly quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, when I think about it, I also wonder how you're going to meet in the middle. I think of, you know, just going back to that corporate head tax and, you know, as the mayor calls it, the community safety surcharge. Aside from the business conversation, which is what kind of takes up all the airwaves, there's the safety piece, right?
Yeah.
The entire reason for this was to maintain some stable funding for the programs that have really helped successfully reduce crime and violence in this city. So how are you thinking that through?
Well, that's why we've taken the opportunity to take a look at those additional efficiencies as well as debt collection to cover that.
Mm.
Now, mind you, when we talk about the community business,
safety
program that the mayor's talking about, covered around the head tax, projecting $100 million, he's identified $18 million of it to go to the same small businesses that are paying the head tax that are impacted, which tells you right from the beginning that it's a flawed process. 100 companies is too small. 500 is what SBA says is small businesses. We should be looking at that. But the reality is that in order to have compromise, you got to have the mayor at the table. We have 12 aldermen that met this weekend with senior members of the administration. The one key player that was missing was the mayor. We need to have him at the table so that we can have real discussions around what's going to be acceptable, what are lines that are drawn in the sand. Those are these things that we need to understand.
Money's got to come from somewhere, right?
Yep.
You don't want it to come from businesses. The mayor and his allies don't want it to come from residents. What's the path forward?
And what I would say too, you asked, how do we meet in the middle?
Yeah.
My answer is we meet in the middle, right? I might be someone who's negotiating at a $0 head tax because of my experience in startup work. That's my negotiation point. The mayor wants the $21 an hour. Propose half of that, right? It will get you a few votes. It might not get you my vote, but it'll generate some revenue and get a budget. I was a corporate attorney previous to this. We'd have deal calls. We'd look at every issue that remained and we'd figure out what meeting in the middle meant. Sometimes with dollars, it actually just means cutting the pie in half. And I think that's something we could do here and just hasn't been that collaborative.
Well, and I would also add that we're facing a $1.1 billion deficit this year. We're facing a $1.3 in 2027. So if we don't put forward structural revenue in order to deal with it, we're going to be in the same situation again. I want to remind the listeners, though, the $100 million is just a red herring. It's 0.00625 of a $16.6 billion budget. We're spending all this energy here when in fact we could be talking about the list of efficiencies that we've created, whether you're looking at IT modernization, which could save $90 million. There's a lot of things, but we got to get to the table. Now, if the mayor has said, this is a campaign budget, I'm going to be, you know, rallying around the community organizations to say that it's the billionaires versus the people,
right,
then that's a different strategy. But if we're talking about passing a budget that's structural, responsible, and balanced, then that's when he needs to get to the table.
So what's the timeline here? You're pushing for a vote this week, I hear? Is that right?
No, we're not pushing for a vote this week. I think that, again, we had several aldermen had a meeting over the weekend. I think that the
You said there are some others who are in support, but they hadn't signed on.
Well, yeah, there's other aldermen that were not part of the meeting. Again, we're north of 26. We're north of 26. But we feel that there's an opportunity here. If the administration wants to work together, fine. If not, we'll push forward a budget and see where the chips land.
Yeah, and I want to add to that, you know, say we did introduce this budget for a vote, which again, we don't have a budget office really helping us in the same way that the mayor does. So I that's not our preferred route here. But if we did that and we passed it with 27 votes, it could still be vetoed by the mayor. And I think, you know, again, we probably have the route to passing our budget a little bit better in the moment than the mayor does with his. But we don't want to run into dead ends. We're not trying to play with Chicago residents and pass a vote that's or budget that's just going to then be vetoed.
Yeah, we'll have to leave it there. That is 43rd Ward Alderman Timmy Knudsen and 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas. Thank you both so much for making the time.
Thank you so much, Sasha.
Okay, now let's get to those big headlines of the day. At the table to help me break down the stories, Claire Lane, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor, and Elvia Malagon, health reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Kristi Noem, who's the Department of Homeland Security Secretary, was in Chicago over the weekend. So Elvia started by giving us the rundown.
So this was for an event that happens every year, and usually people probably don't even notice that it happens. It's the U.S. Coast Guard, and they're basically collecting trees and dispatching them to charities. But this year, Kristi Noem, because she's in charge of DHS and the U.S. Coast Guard is under them, she was here to help with the event, which led to protesters showing up. And then in Elgin, at the same time that this was happening, there was an operation going on there in which there was a situation where a man barricaded himself and there was a standoff between protesters and federal agents. And
Wait, so let me make sure we get this right. So she was here to deal with some Christmas trees.
Yes.
But, you know, her presence also, in addition to that, there was a show of force among immigration agents and this burst of action on the western and southwestern suburbs, including Elgin.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And we hadn't really seen that show of force in a couple of weeks. Things had started to slow down. So this was really one of the first
Maybe her presence, you know, hyped them up a little bit, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. The mayor of Elgin's not happy with what happened.
No, he's not. And he's emphasizing that, you know, this is Elgin is a community that, you know, is built on like diverse communities, and they're really proud of that. But yeah, what they saw was, you know, tear gas deployed, the flashbang grenades deployed, some of the tactics that our colleagues have written about that we've been seeing in Chicago from ICE.
Yeah, so the mayor of Elgin is going to be on Say More around 10 a.m. So to the folks listening, make sure you stay tuned for that conversation. Claire, let's pivot here. The Trump administration, once again, demanding sensitive data on what, some 2 million SNAP recipients here in our state. So what info are they seeking exactly from the people who are relying on this food assistance program?
Right. So the Trump administration says his office is now requiring Social Security numbers, home addresses, and, you know, sort of the hot button issue, immigration statuses for all SNAP enrollees. And they're threatening to withhold benefits if states don't hand over that data. U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary, this is Brooke Rollins, says the data demand is an effort to root out fraud in the program, which she claims is rampant.
Elvia, on Friday, a CDC panel voted to upend a longstanding recommendation, which is to give newborns the Hep B, the hepatitis B vaccine. So catch us up on what happened there and what the vote was.
Yeah, so this vaccine has been given to newborns pretty much the day that they're born since the early 1990s. So at this point, it's about like a three-decade policy. But this the hepatitis B vaccine has been one of the vaccines that folks who are against immunizations have long targeted. And so what's going to happen now is that it's still recommended, for example, if the mother tests positive for hepatitis B. But otherwise, this becomes an extra step for folks that you're going to have, parents are going to have to talk to their doctors about receiving it. Here in Illinois, officials here are still recommending that every baby who is born get the hepatitis B vaccine, you know, within the first like 24 hours of their lives. And Illinois started their own advisory committee because of what's been happening on the national level. Mm-hmm. So they're actually going to meet next week where they're going to be looking at the new CDC recommendations and making a formal decision on what they will be advising people here to do.
Right. Yeah. Because if we think about it, I mean, I feel like this will have broader implications on our vaccine rates here in Illinois.
Definitely. Doctors that I talked to said that, you know, even though Illinois is sort of becoming a bit of a bubble for this, it still is sowing a lot of distrust, a lot of questions for parents who may start to question if the vaccine is safe or not. And something doctors stressed to me is that, you know, there's nothing really new in terms of like how this vaccine is being manufactured. It really is just the rhetoric of, you know, people have long been opposed to the hepatitis B vaccine. So they were able to make some action and actually change it.
Yeah. Sticking with health news, I want to put this to you, Elvie. I'm sure you have thoughts here. Lurie Children's Hospital will be out of network for all Affordable Care Act marketplace plans in 2026. Now, Crain's Chicago Business is reporting that the move is cutting off access to Chicago's preeminent pediatric facility for families who rely on the exchange for coverage. In a statement, Lurie's is saying that ACA insurers often choose not to contract with academic medical centers, and that they're going to continue to work with the families and their payers when kids need that specialty care out of network. What comes to mind to you as someone on this health beat?
Well, it's just really another thing that's happening with the ACA. I mean, this week we're kind of expecting some kind of vote to come out of Congress, possibly to see if the subsidies are extended or not. But this is really kind of chipping away at, like, is Obamacare, you know, doing what it was intended to do, or is it kind of being chipped away so much that it's not really working for people? And I mean, I know a lot of people, even, you know, outside of Chicago, they come to Lurie because it's so specialized
they
work with children that other hospitals may not have that technicality and specialty to be able to do. So I think it will have a big impact.
So many things to keep your eye on, for sure. Claire, I also hear there's an update over in Indiana and possible redistricting. Can you tell us what's happening with our neighbor state?
Yes, Republicans in the Indiana Senate continue to face threats as President Trump continues his push for lawmakers to redraw their congressional map. So Trump's goal to expand, you know, the Republican Party's power in the 2026 midterm elections. Redistricting, as we all know, usually done only once a decade, but Trump has been accelerating this process or really trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana senators, some of them are opposing this plan, which would really dilute the Democratic influence in places like Indianapolis. Senators are scheduled to convene today in Indiana to consider the latest on this proposal.
Interesting. So there is a vote today.
There is a vote today. And if they resist, which is what they've been doing, it would signal, you know, limits to Trump's dominance and the Republican Party. So Indiana Republicans might be up against a tough group of Democratic senators today. We shall see.
One to watch for sure. You know what else I'm keeping an eye on?
Let me guess. I was going to say, look up.
Look up. Look down. Look down even.
Look everywhere.
Look
actually,
everywhere.
Better yet, just close your eyes.
So much snow that it looks like Chicago's broken another winter record, Claire, which is kind of crazy because is it even winter yet, folks?
I know.
Let's look at our calendars real quick.
It was just Thanksgiving. We're looking ahead to Christmas.
It's fall, isn't it?
Yeah,
technically.
But the latest record that we've broken, it's the fastest start to the city's snowfall season since 1978. So this is just the amount of inches of snow that we've gotten this quickly in this sort of winter season, we'll call it, since it's not officially winter.
Wink, wink. Wink.
Right. Chicago has already seen 17.1 official inches of snow. So the total for 2024 was 17.6.
Yeah.
So we've almost got that in our back pocket. The record set back in 1978 was by December 7th, city had 24 inches of snow.
Goodness.
Well, what's coming next isn't quite snow. It's rain. Temperatures are going to heat up.
Great.
Highs in, you know, the upper 30s, 37, 38. But if we get anything falling from the sky in terms of precipitation, Sasha, it's likely going to be a wintry mix at best.
So much precipitation. I mean, I don't know. Have you folks been shoveling over the last week or so? I feel like every time we shovel, there's like another heavy dusting of snow. And then you have to shovel again.
My building ran out of salt, if that puts any perspective on it for you.
How's it been going on your back there, Elvia? You doing okay?
I'm doing okay. And luckily, I have a coveted garage spa right now.
Queen.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm living.
Luxuries.
You're Chicago royalty.
Yes.
We'll leave it there. WBEZ's Claire Lane and Elvia Malagon from the Chicago Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Meha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.